That was beautiful. Thank you. So, usually I look at these during the musical meditation, but I have to tell you, I played the oboe for 12 years, and this is one of the first times we've had oboe music for special music, so I thought, I'm not gonna blow this opportunity. So, that's why. So, these have not been seen before. And what I'm thinking of doing is trying to get through all of them, and then seeing if there's conversation, if we have time, about some. And that's going to be ambitious, because there's a lot. Thank you, everybody. And so in no particular order. Okay. And I'm going to... I'm going to talk about my sabbatical, too, but I'm going to do these first and then talk a little bit about that. Okay, thoughts on marijuana legalization. Let's jump right in. It generally makes sense to me because I think what we've been doing doesn't work, and all it does is create a higher market for it. And I was really interested lately to hear a story about a drug dealer from California, marijuana dealer, who found that once it was more legal there with the medical marijuana, he was making less money, so he moved to New York where it's illegal, where he can make more money. To me, that says something. Have you swam in the ocean, and did you see a shark? Yes, not when I was swimming. I did see early, like when I was 10, I was swimming in the ocean and I saw dolphins, which I confused for sharks, and it really freaked me out, but then I found out they were dolphins and I was fine. My best shark experience was I went parasailing in Florida a couple years ago at the same place Adele went, and I went for the Institute for Excellence in Ministry, and it was kind of shallow water, and we're really high, and I don't like heights that much. And directly below us was a huge shark that we could see in the water. And so I was thinking that would be a really bad time to go down. And I didn't. Being fairly new here, I thought this would be the place to learn, practice, and participate in meditation. Are there classes or groups? Yes. Yes, indeed. We have two meditation practice groups. There is, and they're both in the Zen tradition, though different aspects of the Zen tradition. There's one on Saturday morning at 6:30 a.m., so you do have to like to get up early on a Saturday. And then there's one Sunday evening at 6 p.m. And Margaret and Eric are active in that group. Anyone active in the Saturday morning group who's here? Okay, well anyway, these two you could ask about the Sunday night group. And the Sunday night group is more modeled on the Zen approach of Thich Nhat Hanh. And so the groups have really different flavors to them. One of the great things about any faith tradition is that there are so many different manifestations of it, variations of it, and Buddhism is no exception. So, you know, we could have 10 different Buddhist meditation groups and they'd all be quite unique, because there's different approaches within Buddhism. So my advice would be to check these out, and if you have another idea in mind, talk to us about starting your own. Actually, I think schism is a good thing. Okay, thoughts on hell. Don't think it exists out there. I do think it exists on Earth, and that's when we don't take care of each other. And that's the hell that I'm much more concerned about than the one out somewhere in our imaginations. If you won the lottery, what's the first thing you would buy? And charitable donations to the building fund don't count. So, that's one where, because I didn't read it ahead, that was what I was going to answer, so darn it. There's so many good things going on in this community that I would love to be part of. And one of my frustrations is that I wish I had more money to give away, because it really is meaningful. And there's so many good organizations locally that I support either nominally or not at all. So I would love to just I'd love to run a foundation that's money I got in the lottery and give it away. That would be amazing. What else would I do with it? I don't know. I like. We have a little place up north, and it's a garage, no running water. I kind of like it that way. So would I want to build something up there? Probably not. Travel. Okay. How can stoic negative visualization, imagining the loss of something, benefit members of the UU faith? Wow. So how could stoic negative visualization, so visualizing something you've lost? Well, I actually think, for me, it actually helps a lot to meditate on death. First of all, we know it's going to happen. And what I think awareness of death does is it helps us understand how short life is, how fragile it is, how for any of us it can be over in the next instant. And that, to me, makes me cherish my life more. It makes me more attentive to it. It makes me connect more. Hopefully it doesn't make me frantic to get everything in, because you never know, but to try to live to the fullest I possibly can. I think that is a negative visualization that's really powerful. I shared a long time ago, there's a Buddhist practice talked about in one of the ancient Pali texts of actually meditating on a decomposing human body. And, you know, at first that sounds really awful, but it's instructive. And that's the spirit of that meditation. I think all of us in our society have a lot harder time doing that than we used to, because death is sort of whisked away, and we have the people that deal with death in the hospitals and the funeral homes, and we don't have the bodies in the parlor of our living room, you know, in our house, where we have a chance, even as kids, to meditate on what death is. And I think that's a real loss for our society. Someday I'll do a sermon here on why I actually am tempted to have an open casket at my memorial service, which is really not the norm for Unitarian Universalists. But partly it comes from that understanding. How does one engage in political or social discourse and action without becoming angry or dehumanizing toward one's opponents, especially when they say or do things one finds offensive? I thought it was going to say when they're stupid. I've shared before, but I keep coming back to the thought that I might be wrong, so that's got to keep me from dehumanizing. I have had beliefs that I have determined as I lived on were wrong, and I would really hate to have marginalized or attacked or been angry at someone for what I later figure out is actually a mistaken belief. So I try to remember that even when I'm really pretty sure I'm never going to believe what another person is telling me, I try to remember that. And I try to visualize someone like Gandhi who was able to do that well in my mind. My hunch, though, is Gandhi or Martin Luther King had their moments of thinking, I hate these people. They keep coming after me and my people. They keep oppressing us. But then they didn't act on that. You know, they still sought to act in a loving way. And so I try to do the same thing. And I have to say, there are times when it's hard. And lately I've felt like it's been hard. I see in our state a lot of things changing that I don't like. And I'm finding it really hard not to just think, what a bunch of idiots. When you ponder where the fellowship might be in 5 to 10 years, what are your greatest hopes and fears? My greatest hope is that we'll actually continue what we've been doing, which is this interesting meld of continuing to evolve and transition with this underlying spirit that stays similar. If that makes any sense, I think one of the reasons that we have grown a lot and not fallen apart is that as we've grown, we've been able to keep a core of the fellowship sort of continuous. So I'm always interested that newcomers to the fellowship say a lot of the exact same things about their experiences here that people said 22 years ago. And, you know, it's really different. on the outside, the building. The old Moose Lodge had a whole different feel to it. We have 700 instead of 100 members. But there's some underlying continuity that predates me, and I hope postdates me as well. So I'm excited about continuing that. It's really unusual for any faith community, certainly for Unitarian Universalist communities, to be able to do that. It's very special. And sometimes I think my only charge here has been to keep that core intact as we've grown. And again, I come back to, you know, why do we grow? Why do I hope we keep growing? Because there's more people out there who would want to be here if they knew about us. And one of my hopes is that in the coming years, maybe we'll be able to really get this multi-site thing down and have services here and in Oshkosh and maybe one or two other places in Northeast Wisconsin and still be us, you know. I think that would be really cool. My greatest fear is that community is really hard, and it's really fragile. I get that, and as healthy and as strong and as vibrant as this fellowship is, it's fragile. It's always going to be fragile. And so I'm always fearful of that fragility, but it's a fact of life. So I live with it. Why is it that prayer works for some people and not for others? My thought is that it's a spiritual practice, and we each have a spiritual practice or a kind of orientation that works, and a lot that don't. So if prayer works for you, I think that's fantastic. If it doesn't, try something else. That's the spirit here, you know. So I personally find prayer to be meaningful in that it helps me remember what I'm about, what's most important to me, who I care about. It helps me prioritize my values and my actions in a given day. And that's it. I mean, I don't think someone's listening or answering on the other end, and that's fine. Some people do, and that's fine too. So use it if it works. What do you see as the strengths and weaknesses of the UU Association and your role to help this now and into the future? The great strength and weakness of the UU Association is that it is a free gathering of congregations, which means that it's free, and I like that, and it doesn't have the power of a central governing authority, and that limits what we can do. Would I trade that? No, I wouldn't. I really like the freedom that we put at the centerpiece. So to me, the UUA works best when it helps congregations, gives congregations resources for dealing with the issues they're dealing with, and when it helps them find each other to share and learn from one another. And my role is to try to help this congregation be as strong as it can and help us be in relationship with other congregations so that we can share some of what we've learned and also learn from others. And that's been huge for us. I figured out a couple of years ago, we tracked how many congregations contacted us and that we offered some form of assistance to in a year, and it was about 35. That's pretty cool. And we turn to congregations for assistance all the time. That's how it should work. Do I wish we paid our full fair share of dues? Yes, I do. And I hope we will make more progress than we're going to make in the next year. What one thing do you expect to bring back to us from your sabbatical? I hope to bring back some recharged batteries. So this work is not always easy. And honestly, the email and the night meetings after a while start to weigh down. So I'm looking forward to no night meetings and no email, which is why you can't email me while I'm gone and expect an answer. It's all going to be deleted unread. So that's what I hope. I found it complicated to talk to children grade school age about death and dying when our beliefs are not concrete or absolute. What advice do you give? I think that's really a tough question for all of our beliefs, not just about death and dying. And all I think we can do is share honestly what our beliefs are in as accessible a way as we can and with an openness to them. So maybe with a child you share, you know, I'm not sure what happens when we die. Some people think this, some people think that, you know, and describe those. And then say, and here's my best guess right now. I think that's good enough. And I also think kids will ask what they want to know, and they won't ask about what they're not ready to tackle. So just go with where the kid is. I remember a fellowship organization crisis the last time you went on sabbatical. yes, surprisingly, so do I. resulting in an officer resignation. Can you refresh our memories, update the new bios, update us on a crisis management during the sabbatical time? And then, have you found a Packer bar in London yet? Haven't looked, but I'm sure there is one. On to the next. No. so the first part, yes. So what I think happened in 1996 when my last sabbatical occurred was that there was a vacuum when I left, and partly because I was the one minister on staff. We had just very, very part-time other staff. And so for the one full-time person to leave is kind of leaves a big vacuum. And so people naturally had to fill the vacuum, and it was then difficult upon my return for some to unfill the vacuum. I think that's part of it. Another part is we were at the key critical moment of growth transition that is the single hardest moment between a small and a medium-sized congregation. So it was kind of a perfect storm. And what I decided then is that I would not take another sabbatical until we had another minister. So we got another minister, and I was about to take a sabbatical. Well, the other thing is I didn't want to take a sabbatical while my kids were in school. I wasn't going to miss, like, the last 6 months of Ian's senior year. So I was about to take a sabbatical, and then Dottie Matthews decided she wanted to take a job elsewhere, and so it wasn't good timing. So now finally we've got everything in place. My kids are out of the home. We have a second minister. She's been through now just about a whole year cycle, and so I'm going. And I'm much more confident about the fellowship's ability to handle issues now than I was in 1996. We have a healthy congregation team that's worked long and hard, and we all have participated in that work to help make our community as healthy as possible. We have an excellent governing board. We have a terrific staff, and I think we're just much better situated. So I'm optimistic about it, and I still come back to, and community's fragile. So it is fragile, and this is going to be a challenge. Okay, enough on that. That's interesting, though. Who, what, how many, what gender do you pray, I'm assuming, to? Considering chaos theory and the interdependent web of life, not sure. And if our prayers are not answered correctly, is God fallible? Does God care? Does God delegate to non-powerful underlings? Okay, that's great. So, for me, not for everybody, for me, it doesn't make any sense to envision a God who is able to actually control how things happen. Just doesn't make sense to me. Because I know bad things happen, so I can't say, well, then, so why is that? Why is God, you know, behind 9/11? That doesn't make sense. So, for me, I do pray, but I don't see God as this all-powerful, all-knowing entity. I see God as this spark of the divine within each of us, within nature, and so I don't pray for things to be fixed. You know, unless I'm really scared on an airplane, okay, I'll admit it. But then, I don't, you know, part of me knows, okay, what are you doing there? So I don't really envision God as a male or a female. I really like using the pronoun it for God, because I think God, this idea just isn't captured by male or female. That said, I think specific male images and specific female images convey some of the reality, so I find those appealing in a very limited sense. Let's go a lot on that. Million-dollar projects seldom go as planned. It is, if a major decision needs to be made in your absence, who will make it? Actually, the same people that would make it if I was here, which is ultimately our governing board and its building steering committee. The steering committee reports to the board. That's where the decisions get made. And if it's a really, really, really big decision, the congregation will be consulted. So I can share with you that, yes, plans do not always go as we thought. So you may notice that out there, it doesn't look all that different from last week. So here's what happened, as far as I can tell. We had the Diggers Hotline. Terry, you can correct me. Diggers Hotline came, and they identified things to watch out for, but not so much back here, but where they saw the construction starting. And so then our cable was cut for our community, our internet service, because builder didn't know it was there. And then they found a phone line going through this area, which we're not sure works, or, you know, we're not sure if it's actually a functioning phone line. So we call a phone company, and they say, yes, we'll get someone there in 5 business days. Luckily, it rained, so really, they wouldn't have done much anyway. But that's what happens. Building projects, unexpected things happen. It'll happen. Terry Dawson is co-chair with Albert Park. They and their team will figure out, and we're not going to have a congregational meeting about the phone cable, right? That would drive us all crazy. The board's not going to act on that. These guys will run with it, with their team, and when they need more assistance, more direction, they'll report to the board, and if the board needs more, they'll report to us. Fair? Is that good?
Exactly.
All right. Good. And it's just the way it goes. What is your most dependable de-stressor, tool for centering yourself when you are disillusioned or depressed over the state of the world? The best thing I can do is go up to this little tiny lake up north and just sit there. It's really quiet, and it just recharges me. I can hear the birds. I can see the animals. It's perfect. So that's my best thing. I follow the Packers, so that's good too. But not for centering, for de-stressing. What prevents you from joining the men's group retreat some year? That's a great question. As a minister, I'm a member of the congregation, and I believe that's true. That captures some of my role, but I'm also other. You know, I was called here, I came here for this position, and there's a different quality of relationship that I have than the average member. And so it's a little difficult to join a group that has at its center such intimacy and vulnerability, which is what I love about the men's group and why it's been strong for so long. And I would like that, but it feels weird to me to share that with a few people in the congregation, but not everybody. And it's just something about this role that, for me, negotiating it, finds that difficult. And so I have not done that. Also, the retreat happens to be when I used to do my sermon series, so that was a good excuse. But it is on a weekend, and usually I'm working on weekends. So, but the bottom line for me, the more important reason is simply that there's something for me about this role of minister that doesn't feel like that's the right thing for me to do. So, and I try to be open and vulnerable with you in sermons and, you know, right now and answering questions honestly. But there's still a moving but real line there that, for me, I try to maintain. All right, we're getting there. I need to load up my Kindle for a long plane flight. What books are your top book picks lately? So do I. What is your opinion of the F word creeping more and more into everyday usage? Facebook, the scene. I'm not a fan of the F word, which is why you haven't heard me use it in a sermon. And probably won't. And I think it's a word that I don't like. Okay, books. Right now I'm reading a history of the Philippines, the relationship between the Philippines and the United States. That's just fascinating. And it's by Stanley Karnow, is that? Something like that, who died in the last couple months. Written in 1988, but really interesting. And there's a lot about it that makes me think, wow, if we had read this before we invaded Iraq, we might have done things differently. Or before Vietnam, you know, etc. It's interesting. And we don't know. There was an insurgency in the Philippines that was really tricky, cost a lot of American lives, and in the end, we kind of figured, maybe they're better off being run on their own than us owning them. And I'm reading a book called Nixon Land about Nixon, sort of the 1960 to 74 through the lens of Nixon. What is the difference between a hurricane and a typhoon? I found this out because I asked in the Philippines. No difference. Typhoons are in the Pacific. Hurricanes are in the Atlantic. Who knew that? Did you guys? Some people knew that. I never knew that. What is the one personal resource we should take advantage of more often? I do think it's solitude. And I think it's a weird because we're the Americans today are the most lonely people who have ever existed on the face of this planet. So you'd think we'd have lots of time for solitude, but we don't really, do we? Right? Because we fill that time with other things that disconnect us. What area of new point or thought do you expect to change the most? What's number one on your bucket list? You know, right now, I really want to go back to Sri Lanka sometime. So I spent half a year there at the beginning of a war. The war went on until 2 years ago, 20-some years. So it wasn't a good time to go back. I'd like to go back. How do you rationalize, justify eating meat? That's a great question, and partly I do out of, it works in my family. I try not to eat a lot of meat. The ethical component of it I do find troubling, especially when the meat comes from places that add so much to the huge problems facing our climate. But I could easily be a vegetarian. Advice for an 18-year-old not going to college. Take your time. Be who you are. Maybe college works. Maybe it doesn't for you, and that's okay. Be who you are. Can coffee be a spiritual experience? Absolutely. I like a good cup of coffee. So my wife, Amy, just went to the West Coast and got Pete's Coffee, which is my absolute favorite. Looking at something obituaries, I so often see notes of the deceased being welcomed to heaven by Jesus. But if there is no afterlife, so what? You know, maybe Jesus does welcome people to heaven. I don't know. So if someone believes that, that's good. I think that's great. I don't believe it. Doesn't make any sense to me. I would not find anything kind of, helpful in that. It wouldn't make me feel better about dying. It just would, to me, seem like, wow, that's really weird. So it just doesn't make sense to me. And I guess, some people would say, if there is a Jesus welcoming people to heaven, I'm not all that likely to go there. So end of problem. Okay. I want to talk about, so that's it. Thank you. That was good. That's all right. Great questions. And like each of them we could do a whole dialogue about, and we'll have a minute to go back to some that struck your fancy. But I want to talk about the sabbatical briefly. So five things I want to say. First of all, I am so grateful to be going on sabbatical. That is a huge gift that you are giving me, and I believe it as such. I know that most people in our culture do not get sabbaticals, and I wish it were otherwise. I think anyone doing any work that has any ounce of creativity in it would really benefit, and their workplace would benefit by having a sabbatical. I really believe that. And so I feel really lucky, and I thank you for that. Second thing, overview of the sabbatical. I'm not going to go into detail, but there's a guide to the sabbatical that's out in the lobby, and I invite you to take that if you haven't. It's on the welcome table. This gets at the thing that I think will change the most. I want to find out why a few congregations that are Unitarian in London are doing well, while most of them are near death, like on life support. Why is that? London, like most of Europe, is really secular, and that's where the United States is heading. In the last 10 years, our country has moved in that direction far more than anyone would have predicted. As Unitarian Universalists, we have to figure this out. If we don't, we get lumped with everyone else. And I've talked to people who say, yeah, I wouldn't go to your church or Alliance or the Catholic. You know, they see us as all the same because we're religion, and religion is a bad brand these days. So how do we appeal to those who have decided they are not religious? I think we can do that, and we may be the only congregation that can do that. But it's not a slam dunk. We have to figure out how to do it. That's one thing I'm going to look at. The third thing was the brochure. The fourth thing is, a lot of people have asked, is Amy going with me? And she is, but only for about 5 or 6 weeks because she can't get a sabbatical. So, for a while. And the fifth thing is hopes for me and for the fellowship. I hope that this will be a good experience for me. I hope it'll be a good experience for the fellowship too. And that all of the, you know, you will learn something about yourselves and the fellowship in my absence. One of the things I'm keenly aware of is that no one is indispensable, and that includes me. If I am indispensable, then we're all in trouble because I won't always be here. So a really good lesson would be, hey, you know, things went okay. I mean, we're glad to have the guy back, but things went okay. I'd like that. That would feel really good. So with that, we actually don't have time for conversation, I realize. I would, though, invite responses after as you're leaving, or shoot me an email. I'll be around this month. Give me a phone call.